the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast featuring the Crop Doctors.
Good afternoon from the Crop Doctors Podcast studio in Stoneville. Charles Downs is here with Tom and I today. Charles is an independent crop consultant. Charles, where do you live?
I live in Indianola, Jason.
Indianola, okay. I honestly didn't know that. Charles kind of drew the short straw. He is the, I guess, the acting overlord of the Rice Consultants Group of the Mississippi Agriculture Consultants Association. So we do an extra meeting with the guys at Check Rice every year. And so we were doing that today at Stoneville. Charles was gracious enough to take time after lunch to walk over here to the CAP Center and record a podcast with us. So Charles, thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you all so much for having me on.
Charles, we'll get into checking rice and checking in general in a second, but you know, I'm going to ask you something. I sold my truck. I'm currently driving my daddy's Toyota Tundra. Tim Sanders, I already apologized to you in person. I'll apologize to you on the podcast. I'm sorry I made fun of your Toyota truck. Really, I made fun of Tim's Toyota truck because he's got the flashy black rims on it. But the Toyota is a tank. So, y'all that are crop consultants, I mean, that truck's kind of like your number one piece of equipment, right?
It is, Jason. Yep,
it's your office. It's your everything. How do you go about deciding what kind of truck that you want? Before you answer, it's like Tim's Toyota guy. You know, some people got 3/4-ton diesels, and they just crank them in the morning, never cut them off. Maybe some of the older gentlemen, maybe like a smaller truck. How does Charles Downs go about deciding what kind of truck he's going to buy?
Jason, I guess it's all about preference. I guess I've always been a Ford guy myself, always driven Ford vehicles. And this last go around, I chose to try a Tundra. I guess you could say I'm a Toyota man now. We'll see how the next couple of years, how it holds up. But so far, knock on wood, everything's been pretty good so far.
I'm just going to imagine that Tim influenced you and got you to buy the Tundra.
He didn't. Actually, Jason, at the time, you know, all the COVID stuff was going on and there was a lot of the trucks were short and Tundra, they just happened to have a couple of them. So I said, well, I'm going to give it a try. So here we are.
I'm not disappointed in it all. Daddy's is old, too. I'm not disappointed in it all. But that thing is, it is a tank. It needs a bigger gas gauge on it because you can kind of watch the gas gauge go down.
Yep, that's for sure.
I've heard everybody say that.
Charles, tell us how you got into crop consulting, what your background is, and then we'll maybe get into some more details about specifics of the business after that.
I started out from a young age, around 7th grade. I was working for a large soybean and corn farm in Indianola and worked for them all the way through junior high, a little bit in high school, and then I got offered a job to scout crops and I guess my junior year of high school with Pete Baltman. And so I started working with Pete. His dad was also a consultant. Scouted all the way through high school, through college, and got my consultant's license. I'm about to start my 13th season.
Are you looking forward to it? I mean, that's a question I guess
to it every year, Tom. I get excited once I get past the wintertime. I look forward to planting season. So I love my job, and I love what I do. I love working with farmers. I've been around farmers my whole life, and I love working with them.
Charles, what's the progression of a young guy? So you were in basically middle school, or you were in high school starting that out. So what's the progression of, I guess, increase in responsibilities over time as you learn that profession?
That's a great question, Jason. Starting out as a scout, you don't have a whole lot of responsibility starting out. It may just be swinging a sweep net. And as you work more for your consultant through the summers, he begins to trust you more and you take on more responsibilities, weed identification, you know, and then eventually on to herbicide recommendations.
That's something I think young people gravitate towards when you're at that age, is to go out and work outside. Do you still see a lot of kids that age that want to get involved in that type of effort?
Tom, when I was first started working with Pete, there was about 5 or 6 of us at school that were had started working for consultants. We all worked, and some of us chose to stay in the profession. Some of other colleague students at the time, they chose to go the industry route. It seems, from my perspective now, it seems like there's less and less, I guess, scouts available than what it was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, I think you can say the same thing about us looking for help during the summer, which similar type position, a high school kid, which we can't hire high school kids until they're 18.
Right.
So most of our folks are in college, but you know, we used to have
it was a
lot to choose from, and now you're picking and choosing.
It seemed like you had an inch and a half worth of folks coming and applying for jobs out here. And now it's been, it's been difficult to get the same numbers of applicants for a summer period.
Yeah, you're lucky if somebody knows somebody.
Right.
Wants to come and work. That's been the most successful way we've done it the last few years. So I think that definitely has changed, even in the time since you were doing it.
Right.
And I don't know what you can attribute that to, because these types of jobs have always been available.
Right, yep.
Heck, when I was in high school, and this was in the upper Midwest, I had wanted to get a job working outside in the summer, and you could not get outside jobs because everybody wanted an outside job because the weather was just perfectly nice. I mean, it was warm. It would get into the 80s and really low 90s for a few times, but I have not asked anybody up in that part of the country anymore if they have that same number of people that are involved and want to do that or not. But just based on what we just said, I think those numbers have probably decreased.
That was before global warming, so it only got into the 80s instead of the...
Before it got to 105 in July. Yeah.
Well, Jason, just it doesn't get as warm in northern Indiana as what it does here.
I know, and but it was also a long time ago.
Just stop, just because I'm the oldest person in the room. You have to get that little jab in there. It's fine. I won't bring up the fact that you turned out of the Love's gas station just like 10 days ago and went the wrong direction back to the state that you'd already come from.
That's a fact. That happened.
That's fine. Walk us through your basic day, Charles.
Yeah.
And I'm talking post-planning or even, you know, start from now to give the listeners just a general idea of what happens at the beginning of the season, because it probably differs for everybody.
Right, right. You know, Tom, starting out, we pretty much start, if you want to say in the fall, we'll start with after harvest, we'll start soil sampling. For, you know, all winter long, we do fertility recommendations, herbicide recommendations to prepare for planting, you know, whether that's fall burn down, spring burn down, just depending on different situation, different growers. So then planting season comes, and what we'll do at planting, we'll work on more recommendations for herbicide if spring or fall burn down was not applied. Planting gets here, planters are rolling, we're running around working on maybe some weed problems we're having on certain farms with certain growers, doing stand counts, sometimes helping calibrate planters, rice drills. We're a full-service consulting business from start to finish. We have our hands in every aspect of the growing seasons.
Charles, specifically about rice is a very labor-intensive crop in general, and I know y'all approach consulting services with rice a little differently than you would the other grain crops. So describe that to our listeners too.
Yeah, Jason, you know, rice is one of my favorite crops to consult on. It's very labor-intensive for the growers and for the consultants. It's a lot of scouting. It's a lot of walking. It's a lot of weed identification, as you know. You've got certain chemicals that will kill certain weeds. It's not really like a soybean field where we can put out Roundup and dicamba and we can kill 99% of the weeds. You've got to kind of know which herbicides kill which weeds and rice, what you can mix together, what you can't mix together. It really is a science, and I enjoy the challenge of getting to do that with my growers.
Is the schedule for rice different in your business? Is the schedule different than what it is for some of the other crops?
Well, starting out, Jason, it kind of is, because, you know, we're working on getting a stand and herbicide control and fertilization. The beginning of the season, it's sometimes we're around twice a week with rice just so we can get the ball rolling, get the fertilizer, water applied, that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a little bit different versus soybeans and corn.
How do you fit rice in with your other crops? I mean, obviously you consult on some other acres.
Right.
What's the breakdown percentage on your acres?
Well, of course, Tom, this year commodity prices aren't what they have been, and so everybody's looking at different options to figure out what we can grow and make a profit, or at least break even where we won't lose money. So a lot of guys are looking at rice right now. Rice looks good on all the budgets, so we've got guys more interested in rice. So, of course, that will definitely affect our schedule how much. You know, we'll see come planting season how the soybean market, the corn market, if anything changes. I think a lot can still change. So we're going to have to hold tight and just kind of cross our fingers and hope something with the market takes a turn, so we'll kind of have a better game plan of what our growers are going to plant so they can make a profit.
Charles, I kind of put you on the spot. We didn't talk about this, but it just popped into my head. A lot of the meetings this winter, especially on the stuff that I've talked about, have been about big changes in agriculture and the way we manage weed control. So what are you and guys you work around and work with and the guys that you communicate with in your business thinking about changes in herbicide labeling, vacating the dicamba label, those types of things. What are the conversations that guys in your business are having in that neighborhood right now?
Jason, I think a lot of guys, I think they're worried, the consultants and farmers, I think we're worried about what we're going to do if we lose dicamba. What approaches are we going to take next to battle these weeds, pigweeds in particular? I think it's going to take a lot of intensive scouting. I think it's going to take a lot of guys to be very preventative. I think it's going to be a lot of residual herbicides will be used versus post-applications. I think we're all just kind of crossing our fingers and hope it all works out for the best. Our growers, they need all the help they can get with the different things that we're battling in the agriculture industry right now.
How does a decision like that change what you do on a day-to-day basis? I mean, has that increased your call load? Has that changed maybe how you look at your early season strategies from a weed control standpoint?
Tom, I think it just really boils down to having a game plan, being prepared. What move are we going to make next if we lose dicamba? What's going to be the next play call that we're going to pull off our play card? To how are we going to battle if we lose dicamba? How are we going to battle if we lose, just like with insecticides, some of the neonicotinoids, what are we going to do if we lose that?
It does certainly address the close connection we have between crop consultants and the ag-related community and then the extension service as a whole and how we all work together so well.
Right.
Coming up to, because that's, I mean, Jason, how many times have we talked about in the last 2 to 3 years have a plan A and a plan B? And a lot of that depends on the economics of the situation, what you're planning on planting. And there could still be, sitting here second, third week of February, some significant shifts in acres as it relates to that.
We're still early. Things could change quick.
Well, and corn acres may be set.
Right.
For the most part.
Right. We're getting very close to corn planting.
You say that, but you also don't know what's going to happen between the day we're recording this and when we release it. I mean, because it's so much of that's driven by the weather.
Right.
That's right. No, that's just what I was going to say. You don't know how much it's going to rain.
The weather's great.
Forecast.
Yeah, the weather's great right now. It's great for the next week. And then you turn around, it could go back the other direction in a hurry.
With an increased interest in rice acres, have you taken on any new customers this year?
Yeah, Tom, I have. I've taken on a few new accounts, some guys that haven't grown rice in a long, long time, you know, and want to get their feet back in the door, you know. As you know, Tom and Jason, rice seed is incredibly short right now. Our top yielding varieties are pretty much non-existent. They're booked up, and I think that's going to have a huge determining factor on how much rice gets planted in the state of Mississippi this year.
And then what's your breakdown on overall, at least in your thoughts, acres between paddy grown and row rice?
Tom, I think we'll still be 85% to 90% paddy rice and probably 10% row rice. The guys that have been in rice the past 5 or 10 years or longer, most of the time, statistically, they're sticking with paddy rice. Some of our newer, younger producers, producers that are predominantly soybeans and corn that are getting back in rice, they're probably going to lean towards row rice just for the fact of equipment and ground preparation.
I feel like with that, we spiked up 3 or 4 years ago.
Yep.
Percent of acres, maybe not total acres, but a percent of the acres dedicated to that system. We spiked up and got relatively high, maybe in the ballpark of 20%, and I don't remember what year, 20 or 21.
Right.
And now we've kind of settled back down, and I think you're accurate. Your numbers could probably translate for a lot of guys, Charles, that 10, 12%, maybe 15 in some areas. And I think it is driven by what you described, maybe a producer that gets in and out, you know, grows rice
right.
on years where it's more favorable or other things dictate that it fits his system better. Whereas a traditional rice grower, they have a system, they have the equipment, they have the labor dedicated to it, and they are more comfortable doing it that way.
Right.
Well, and we've not discussed it much from a standpoint of a rotational strategy because we've always considered it a rice-soybean rotation and not so much then if you look at it from a row rice standpoint, you could bring in some different cropping strategies, but it would just depend on what your operation looks like.
Charles, I want to kind of shift gears with you. The Mississippi Ag Consultants Association, so you're a member of that.
I am, yep, I sure am.
And we've had, I guess that was last year, or maybe the year before, with Jeff North has been on and talked about the MACA as an organization and kind of the history of it as well. Tell folks that are listening, a guy your age, What are your thoughts on the MACA, you know, as an organization, but then also as a group of guys too?
Right. You know, Jason, I started, when I first started, as soon as I got my license out of college, I started, you know, my business, Downs Ag Consulting, and Pete led me in the right direction to join the MACA, and I've been in the MACA ever since. You know, it's been, I guess, 11 or 12 years I've been in the MACA. Now we're up to, I think, 69 members is what we had this year at our meeting, and I think it's a really great thing for someone maybe that's starting out scouting to look at, that may want to be a consultant one day, to look at and maybe come to our meeting, talk to one of us about maybe a scouting position in the summertime. I mean, I think being an independent crop consultant is very rewarding, and get, like every other career, it's got its challenges, of course, but I think we've got a lot of good guys that know, they're very knowledgeable, and they've been in this for a long, long, a lot longer than me, for a long time. I think that as the years move on, I hope that we can pick up more young guys that want to come in and be an independent crop consultant and work for themselves, for their growers, and represent their growers in an independent way.
It's certainly good to see that there are a few more younger crop consultants that are out there nowadays, because I think if you look at the turnover, there are a lot that are fixing to retire probably over the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, maybe conservatively, yep. And we'll need to replace some of those.
That's right.
Positions, not only within that organization, but who's going to do that work moving forward?
That's right.
Because I would think, at least from where I sit, y'all can only cover so many acres.
Right.
And especially if there's a problem, a big problem, yep, in a year, that's going to really mean that you'll have to devote some additional attention to those,
right,
things.
That's exactly right.
Especially if you've got, I mean, think about how many, I wouldn't say new, but some problematic weed issues, you know, between resistance and then your little yellowcress thing that kind of popped up out of nowhere. I mean, that can basically add to the time of day that it, yep, requires to do your job.
Well, I know we rely on the MACA a lot. You know, we can do it by email to get information out to y'all, but, yep, then I probably rarely do that. More so, I'm just going to call y'all or text you and say, hey, man, you know, what's going on with this where you are? And then I'll send that same text, yep, message to 7, 8, 10 guys spread out all over the state, and I'm able to really get a handle on what's going on. And, man, that's so, so valuable. And I know Tom does the same thing, yep, and Don and Trent, whoever else. We all rely on y'all heavily, and I feel like we have a super relationship, yep, with the MACA, and we go and do y'all's meeting in, yep, Starkville during the wintertime, and it feels like our meeting.
Right.
Even though it's not a Mississippi State meeting, it feels like it is.
I think we're a very special, unique organization. I think we've got a lot of guys that have a tremendous amount of knowledge, and we've got guys in their late 60s and 70s that have been consulting on crops since they were in high school, and they've got a lot of knowledge. I've been fortunate enough to gain a lot of new friends since I've joined the MACA, and guys that are my age and guys that are a lot older that have helped me in my career, and we all kind of just try to help each other and lean on each other, and, you know, when a problem arises, or we've all seen different things. So it's a really nice organization.
As Jason alluded to, the exchange of information has been extremely important. I mean, I learn just as much sometimes when I go out into the field, because they have that firsthand knowledge and experience,
right,
and they've seen things for countless number of years. And then just the change over time, because the cropping strategies in this state have changed since both Jason and I started.
They've changed since I've been in this business that short time.
Charles, what do you say to a guy that maybe is a junior in high school like you were, that maybe comes and works for you for a summer? What do you say to him about crop consulting and then advice if he is leaning towards pursuing that as a career?
Right. Jason, I think I would tell someone young, I would advise them to find a good consultant in their area, maybe somebody that has a really good reputation, maybe someone that worked close to where they live, and I would tell them to go work with them, work hard, don't look at the clock on your phone. Which would be an important.
That's just, I was going to say, don't focus so much on the hours that, right, you're going to be devoting to that.
Because you'll be devoting a lot from early in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, to a lot of times 7:30, 8 in the evenings. It's a very labor-intensive hour job, and you've got to have a very strong support system behind you. I'm lucky my wife is very supportive of my career, and she's always has been from the start, and I think that's very important, being a crop consultant.
I don't know sometimes how y'all do it, to just the hours, but I mean, we do the same thing. I mean, Jason will tell you the spray times when they're up here at just, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning getting ready or whatnot, or leaving late. I mean, that's the nature of ag. And I think a lot of times, at least in the back of my mind, I really feel like sometimes that turns some folks off to it.
I think so. I think so, Tom.
I could say in my life, nothing good has come from the most simple things.
That's
so
exactly
the shortest amount of time. And the more time you put into things, I mean, that's meaningful, not just for you, but for the people that you work for. And that's what's important.
Right. I think that back to a young guy wanting to start out, I think that hard work, you know, integrity, honesty, I think it's all really important. And I would, you know, I'd tell them just to find someone good and work hard under them and, you know, learn as much as you can. Because you're never going to stop learning in the field as a consultant. I've been doing this 12, 13 years, and I'm still learning new things in the field every day. I mean, it's nonstop.
Man, we appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jason and Tom. I sure appreciate being on the podcast. Long time listener.
And we definitely appreciate that. But Charles, I just say, man, I've enjoyed working with you and getting to know you. I don't know how long you and I have been corresponding, you know, on the phone and different things, but I appreciate getting to know you. I appreciate what you do, and certainly thank you for taking a little bit of time this afternoon to visit with us.
Well, thank you all so much. I sure appreciate being on the podcast and working with y'all. I know we have a lot of phone calls in the summertime, and it's never a dull conversation.
No. And I always feel like we end up learning something together, which is pretty important.
Tom, we said this a few weeks ago, and I'll say it again to folks listening. If there's something specific that y'all want to hear, topic that maybe we hadn't covered on here, or a topic that we're not aware of, just let us know. Call us, text us, email us, however you choose to correspond. And if it's something that we can pull off, we will certainly try to make that happen, because we're always looking for new content.
Yeah, and we've had some contact about some of that already, but you know, keep those messages coming. That's pretty important, and it's very helpful to see the direction that people are thinking.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is a production of Mississippi State University Extension.